Hello and welcome to another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. The guest for this episode is Cliff Davis, a permaculture designer and teacher from Tennessee who, along with his wife Jennifer, operates Spiral Ridge Permaculture. Together they offer classes on permaculture, natural building, homesteading, edible forest gardens, earthworks, and many other topics of interest for anyone seeking a lifestyle that consumes less energy and lives closer to the land. They also offer professional design and building services for permaculture and edible forest gardens, eco-education, base mapping, natural building, and soil fertility management. I was first introduced to Cliff through one of my PDC instructors, Ben Wise. After I completed my PDC, I was looking to attend a teacher training and saw that Cliff and Jennifer were hosting a class to be taught by Jude Hobbs and Andrew Millicent through Spiral Ridge Permaculture. Though it didn't work out for me to attend that session, the time that Cliff and Jennifer took to answer my questions and keep me informed left a positive impression on me. That led me to seek him out as a guest when relaunching the show in mid-2012. Fortunately, he was involved in a great deal of hands-on projects involving natural building, both teaching and working, and this is a topic of interest to me. My original plan for this interview included a breakdown focusing on the various forms of natural building, such as cordwood masonry, cob, post and beam, and so on, with a corresponding discussion of the techniques. However, while we spoke, it became clear that, like every situation in permaculture, the applications of natural building are unique to the site and needs of the inhabitants. As a result, our conversation turned to a more general one, looking instead for the ways to gain a knowledge of building with natural materials, and we also touch on some of the legal pitfalls of doing so. To that end, before you rush out and start building, please call your local government or administrative body and find out what is legal in your area in regards to building codes and any necessary permits. I don't want you or anyone else to run into trouble because of any code or other violations. If you have questions, don't be afraid to consult a lawyer familiar with construction practices. These are the professionals who deal with the law. And if you find that the law isn't to your liking or need, you can always work with the government to change it. Sometimes all it takes is one person making the right phone call to make all the difference. We also mentioned several times in this episode that good natural building starts with a good design. Take your time, work through your needs, and draft your thoughts until they become clear. You'll thank yourself for it in the long run. As Cliff says, the little details bite you in the end. If you would like to contact Cliff and Jennifer and find out more about their classes, workshops, or services, you will find a link to their site in the show notes at thepermaculturepodcast.com, where you will also find additional resources to expand your knowledge of natural building. The list of links related to this episode in the show notes is long and are there to provide you with an introduction to the world of natural building. This topic is as broad in its forms and applications as permaculture, and you could easily spend a lifetime learning them. In the meantime, if you have any questions for me, send me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or you can leave a message on the voicemail line, 717-827-6266. I hope you enjoy this time with Cliff as much as I did. Now on to the interview. If you can give us a little bit about of your background, then we can start discussing natural building.
Okay. Well, I basically, right now, for the last 3 years, I've been homesteading a piece of clear-cut land. You know, we're using permaculture and natural building and off-grid simple living in order to help kind of regenerate our lives, but also regenerate the land as well. And so far, we have been healing the land with swales and different techniques and strategies to hold more water in the landscape. We're working with animals to clear the land, teaching our children about the sustainable use of land, learning how to butcher animals and all of these things that you do on a homestead. Also learning a whole lot about nature, especially lately, and building a business. So the last 3 years have kind of been this early successional development of our landscape. And now we're at another jumping point, another transition where we're getting ready to build our house. We're living in a small cabin now that I built, and we're also opening up more land for more agriculture and food forest later down the line. So that's kind of where we're at right now. When I say we, Jennifer and I and the kids are very happily here learning about how to take care of the land according to nature and kind of using nature as our helper and guideline in doing so.
What have been some of the interesting learning points that you've had along the way as you do some natural building and develop the land that you're working on?
Well, the natural building, it's interesting because with natural building, kind of looking around and looking at what grows here, what kind of clay we have here, can we get sand sourced locally, where can we get rock and stone and also recycled products. We use a lot of recycled products, windows and doors and all kinds of different materials. And the biggest learning curve is that design is the most important part of natural building. And all the little details are going to get you in the end, kind of bite you in the end. And that's the reason why we started with a smaller place. And now we're going to be building our house. And so there's all these details that I didn't figure in because we need a place to live right away. And we've got some flaws that are problems, I guess, but they're becoming solutions so that we won't make the same problem in our household. Sourcing materials is quite easy. That's not so hard with a lot of trees in the eastern deciduous forest. We have really good clays. Some are different colors than others. For now, it's been just learning the ins and outs of the details of design.
My father built houses when he was young, and he said that one of the big things about building a home or any kind of a structure like that or taking on a renovation is have a clear idea of what it's going to look like in the end and then working your way backwards so that you can figure out what all those little details are in order to make it work. Would you say that that would be one of the places where you find with your own design, finding those little things that you missed along the way to take the time to design and to make it work?
Definitely. I think that, you know, trying to put it into your mind's eye, visiting the site where you're going to put the house, going into your mind's eye a lot of how you're going to be living there. I mean, I do this on the landscape in general, even with farming. And just trying to see how you know, what is your final objective? How would you like this system to work? Or how would you like this house to accommodate you and your family? How will it accommodate your family when your kids leave? All these things are like the most important part. And then working your way back. Working your way back makes a lot of sense to me. And then trying to live in it, actually trying to act it out in a way. I do that a lot. I try to act it out. I'm sitting in my living room. I get up. I walk around. I go here to the kitchen. From the kitchen, I can go right out to the compost pile and then off to the gardens and collect eggs and breakfast or whatever it might be. So, yes, I agree completely with that statement. That makes a lot of practical sense.
So, in many ways, you're working on this, designing your new Zone Zero then, if you're going to be building your new home using natural methods. As you walk through your home now and think about, you know, getting up from the living room and going into the kitchen and out to the compost pile, are you using those lessons along the way then to think about how you're going to design your next house and locate everything?
Oh, yes. Actually, it was pre-designed. The cabin we're living in now is going to be probably an intern house. And so we've actually had to keep it in our mind's eye that we've been living in Zone Zero, but we aren't in this little cabin that we have to create as kind of a Zone Zero for someone else. And it's also dissected our landscape, at least where the buildings and infrastructure are. It's dissected by business and home. There's fine lines there, but they kind of merge together in many ways. The area where we're living now is more of a business area. The greenhouse is there. The area where we can do processing for vegetables or animals or anything like that is there. The cars are there. The supplies are there, all of that. So we've actually had to think about two Zone Zeros, basically.
One is a professional area and then one is a personal?
Exactly. Because the zones are divided not only to the permaculture zones of efficiency, but also divided in zones of business use and home and then down into Zone 5, the sacred, and places where we want to be. And
I don't know how things are where you live. Here in Pennsylvania, there is all kinds of crazy rules about zoning and mixed use between commercial and residential space. Do you have any of those concerns with where you are? Like if you were going to have a business location there on your property and have people come into it, do you have to worry about zoning issues?
No, you don't. You have to protect yourself by having the correct company structure. This is what I'm gathering so far. We're working through all of this as we speak, but correct company structure as well as the right insurance policies that will protect the land and the business from the land and all those types of things. It's a big fiasco in many ways, but it has to be done in order to separate the two correctly. And in Tennessee, it's quite easy to, there's some major gray areas. It's not like Pennsylvania. We're an off-grid site. It's easy. There's no building codes. It's a lot different down here than it is up where you're living now.
Yeah, no building codes. Oh, I wish I had the I
Yeah,
had
there's
that.
not many places left like that, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you about natural building, because where I am, there's a lot of, if I want to do something like straw bale or a cob home, I really have to bring in a company that has done timber framing and have them do a structural frame and then do infilling with the alternative materials. And even then, there's some question about whether it can be a livable structure or not, or whether it's only an outbuilding, and so many questions, and so many people who go, I'm not really sure, you need to go talk to them.
Well, there's a lot of work that's been done in order to bring natural building into the forefront and basically get it through codes in certain states. So a lot of that information can be applied to other states. And there's representatives out there like One Straw Journal, I think, or Last Straw, maybe. I can't remember. There's different representatives for different techniques who are working through these hurdles of code. And the Natural Building Network is probably a place that one could find the information on a lot of that. For me, it makes sense to say in that particular case with the structure, timber framed or post and beam, that's a safe bet just about anywhere because the post and beam saves you from any other code problems because it's two code. Whatever you infill in the walls is kind of subject to whatever you'd like as long as it can pass. I think you could easily get something coded that way. As long as you keep, from my understanding, as long as you keep the, the structure support into a post and beam or timber frame.
And this is one of those issues that if anybody's doing this kind of work, they're going to want to consult their local municipality, find out what the builders are doing, and make sure that what they're doing is legal so they don't wind up
That's
getting
right.
fined or have any other issues with it.
Yeah, mostly what we do is we teach people about how to build their own places and try to empower people that way. Now, what you're finding is that there's a lot of companies starting to get into green building and slowly into natural building, at least in the Southeast. Everything's pretty slow here. The thing that's stopping a lot of the natural building to reach the forefront is the fact that there's code issues.
I spoke with someone who they're working with a group in Oregon, Recode Oregon, that's looking to change all those codes in
Wow.
that state. So I'm sure that there are plenty of other groups that are operating. And I know a lot of places, depending on where you are, if you're in a smaller area or a town that's not a major city or something like that, a lot of those folks, if you make a phone call or two, you can find out what you need to know and start changing those codes, even as one or two people. When you're working with empowering people to do this, what types of natural building are you walking them through? Straw bale, cob, a little bit of anything.
We do a little bit of anything from post and beam, timber frames to straw clay slip infill to cob to earth bags to stonework, whatever it might be. We kind of teach the broad range, all the hybrid techniques. Simply also, we just try to empower people to use tools and to learn how to use tools, whether it be a chop saw or a skill saw or, that's a really nice feeling to get people to work with tools, especially women. There's something about that. And every time I've been around women with power tools, they seem to really love them. So once they get over the fear, and young people are the same way, the fear of power tools. Not that power tools should be used all the time, but they are, you have to use them sometimes. So, but for the most part, we teach just about anything we can. Also, round pole.
Do you have a particular technique that you would say is your favorite?
Yes, actually, I do. I really enjoy using round poles and then infilling the walls, round pole post and beam construction, infilling the walls with straw clay slip. I just, or slip straw or wood chip slip. I just find that to be one of the better techniques, at least for our particular climate. It's insulative, it's also hygroscopic, so it takes humidity and it takes the moisture flywheel basically, takes the moisture out of the room if it needs to be, it puts it back in if it needs to be. It's not burnable, it's easy to plaster, very easy to plaster, easy to infill. You can infill it. If it's a post and beam structure, you have the nice advantage of the fact that you have a roof over your head, so you can finish a lot of the straw clay slip walls that way. Any walls in general, but so far I like straw clay slip walls a lot and post and beam structures.
Is that what you're going to be using to build your home with?
That's right. Yes. Yeah, we'll do like 12-inch straw clay slip walls, post and beam structure. It's a multi-hybrid, that's for sure. It has a lot of kind of methods and techniques.
Will you then use your home as a demonstration? or document it as a demonstration?
I'm not for sure yet. It ultimately will, I think, because we will have courses out here, and we will have courses actually on the building itself when we're building it. For the most part, I'm not for sure if it'll be a demonstration, you know, that we'll write a whole lot about it. Our main emphasis is agriculture. Once the house is built, it'll definitely have a history to it, and there'll be a video, you know, photography, history of it, and photos, and that's what we'll probably promote, is a lot of the techniques that we use. I'm not for sure if it'll necessarily be a demonstration.
With the courses that you're doing on natural building, are you inviting people in and doing the building as a workshop then?
Yes, partly. The hard thing about natural building workshops is filling them, because people come and build your house and then they have to pay money to do that. We're trying to look at other structures of like permablitzes and all these different techniques to get people to come out to learn a technique, build community, and might just be a weekend, one night of camping, kind of more community style as opposed to business framework. But we will have some courses like plastering and different types of simple weekend courses that will help us to build the house, but also help train people as well.
What kind of plastering are you doing?
Well, we have a humid climate, and we have a lot of driving rains, and we get 52 inches of rain a year on average. The best plaster here so far is either very protected with large eaves over the earthen plaster, or a lime-based plaster, which both of them breathe. They have good breathability, and the lime plaster is that the lime actually helps to kind of protect against mold and mildew and any spores that might want to live in the wall or anything like that. It helps to take care of those problems. And it's somewhat water resistant.
Yeah, I've got a cement block garage that was never finished by the previous owners, and I keep wanting to do some kind of a smooth top coat on it. I've been looking at a lime-based plaster, but we don't get quite 52 inches of rain here. We get around 42 or so, but it can be driving at times. I didn't want to use concrete.
Yeah.
That may be an option.
Yeah, that's definitely an option.
So many of the natural buildings that I see are in the Southwest, with the adobe brick and rammed earth and just mounted earth over an internal structure with the earth ships and things like that. Do you find that the humidity on the East Coast and just the wetness and the rain that can come is one of the biggest issues to try to handle with natural building?
Definitely. The moisture is a problem. The moisture in the ground is a problem. You have to really protect against that stuff if you want to build your house into a hillside or bury it or whatever it might be, or have a basement, any of those issues. That's definitely a big issue down here, is the fact that basements get really wet. And if you're living off grid, you can't get rid of the moisture by just simply turning on the AC, unless you have a really expensive off-grid system, which we don't. For practicality purposes, it'd be much easier to build houses up off the ground a little more with either insulated skirting or insulated floors. Putting the house into the ground is always an issue here. It works, but it takes a lot of design. If anything goes wrong, you can get a lot of moisture in your house.
And that's where we go back to design and being aware of your site and what your conditions are going to be before you try to implement any of these.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's really a big issue, and that's why design's so important. That's why if you're building your own home, staying out on the land, going through the ins and outs of living in a house but not having it built yet, designing a lot, putting it all on paper, asking local people, participating in other buildings that might be similar to the ones that you might want to build, talking to builders that have built really good houses that you like, that all helps out a whole lot. That's what I've done. I've just talked to a lot of builders. I've participated in a lot of crews, basically, building houses here, and that's why I've come up with the conclusions that I have for our particular house. It's kind of finding the knowledge and getting the information, assessment and analysis, all that information, all that you can get. It's really important when you're building buildings and infrastructure.
Because these are going to wind up being ultimately, in many cases, someone's home, if they can take the time, they should go out and really do the hands-on, because just getting a book and reading about it isn't necessarily going to be the means for them to find the information to really know what they're going to need for their particular location. Sitting and reading about all these different ideas until you really know what the drawbacks for each ones are by talking with someone and learning from their mistake.
That's the beauty of other people doing the things so far, is that we can talk to them and ask them, what did you do okay, you know, that worked, and what did you do that didn't work? What would you do differently? That helps a lot. You can learn a lot from books nowadays, but videos are better. And then actual experience of building something, especially when it comes to natural building, I think is important primarily because it teaches people how much actual work has to be involved in building these things. I've always said that you're taking the money away from the industrialized building products and putting it more into the artisan and into the labor of the building. The calories are about the same. You know, it's a lot of work putting in a cob wall or putting in an earth bag foundation or digging a rubble trench. You know, all these things just take a tremendous amount of calories. I think that's one of the primary things that a person would take away from a course is that, wow, that was a lot of work. And do I really want to do this? What ways can I do this that would make it more efficient? Are there other techniques that I could look into that might be a little easier and less labor intensive? And then next, you learn all the builder's tricks. And it's in your body. You know, it's really important to have it in your head. It's important to have it in your heart, but it's also important to have it in your hands, in your body. That's like true knowledge, is when we can get all three of those into the educational process. That's how we really learn.
And I can imagine that going in and getting that hands-on, as you say, learning how much work it is, if you don't know how much an earth bag weighs when it's full,
yeah.
You know, is this a technique, if it's just going to be me 20 miles from anywhere doing it myself, is this going to be a technique that works, or am I going to need a work crew to do it?
Right. You can quickly get rid of the romanticism as soon as you start working on that natural building, because the pictures are beautiful and they're worth every penny of the labor. Finished product is just incredible, but boy, oh boy. It's a lot of work getting there. Commitment is one thing, and then getting rid of the romantic idea of having a naturally built home and learning just how much work it takes, that's all.
You trade that financial equity for a lot of sweat equity to get it done.
That's right.
I have a small natural build coming up here in a couple of months with a friend. He wants to build a cob bench with a rocket stove in it to heat it. And I'm looking at that going, it's just going to be the two of us. I think this is going to take more than just a couple of hours.
Yeah, exactly.
What would you say out of learning about natural building was one of those aha moments for you that it connected, one of those real learning moments?
Wow. I've had several of those, actually. One of them was working on a building that it was a cedar round pole structure that was permitted and to code, and an engineer designed it and an architect designed it. And it was in Alabama. And that was pretty much an aha moment where I went, wow, this is a whole lot of work. Because we cut down all the trees. We tilled all the trees. They were cut to the specs of the frame that was engineered and architecturally designed. That's, I think, when I realized how long it actually takes to build something that is from the land and has to pass through code, and you're doing all the work with a very small crew. I went, wow, this is a lot of work. And it took a long time. I never thought the project was going to end. It seemed to be just painstakingly slow. Once it was up, it was wonderful, but that was an aha moment. And another aha moment I had when we were working on a plaster job on a 3,300 and something square foot straw bale, which I had the aha moment of going, this is a really big house and this is a whole lot of manual labor to finish this. So small was definitely an option. Kind of learning to write down, what do you really need in a house? 100 square feet for my bedroom, 80 square feet for children's bedroom, 100 square feet for bathroom and shower and toilet. And just go all the way down and actually find out exactly what you need, hall space, closet space, mudroom space. And then being surprised that it's not much. And then looking at a 3,300 square foot house and you're going, okay, so I really don't need that much. I'd say those two were big. And then had a lot of great opportunities to work with really wonderful builders. And every time I get to work with a good builder, I'm always in awe at what I learn. Learning by doing is, and just assisting, you know, learning by assisting is really a wonderful way also to kind of learn the things that you need to learn without having to go into the sacrifices of learning it on your own.
I remember when I was leading up to becoming a parent, and the people who had parented before me
said that I was in for a real journey because of the things that I didn't know and the things that no one could tell me about being a parent. And that's the only thing that I can think about when it comes to what natural building must be like, is that really until you do it, you don't know.
Right.
The people who I know who have done construction, my family members and all, they contract out, they go to the lumber yard, they pick up the wood, they go to the hardware store, they buy their nails, their fasteners, their doors, their connectors. Well, I'm thinking back years ago when you didn't have a giant DIY store where you could buy all of this at once, but
yeah.
Now you have a one-stop shop where you can buy all of this, but just the same, you go in and you just pick out your materials from a list, have them dropped off, and you go. But what you're talking about doing with that building in Alabama, you're really starting from the beginning and building the whole thing.
Yeah.
And sourcing your materials, every piece of labor that's involved in that.
That's right. It's a whole different way of thinking. It's a whole different way of thinking and acting.
Again, because I haven't built, the analogy that I think of goes back to, and I don't remember if the mic was on yet or not when you said this, about learning to butcher animals.
Yeah.
And that convenience of going to the grocery store and you buy a pack of meat and it's ready to go. And I've never butchered an animal from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife picked up whole chickens for me to bring home so I can learn to break them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched someone break down a chicken in like 2 minutes. And then I remember me breaking down my first chicken was like an hour. As I'm like, okay, so I cut here and I trim this and this pops out and there's this and this. And I've gotten faster, but I realize what a different skill really makes.
Mm-hmm.
To learn these processes as we go forward, practicing permaculture, moving closer to the earth. As you mentioned about needing a really serious off-the-grid system to run air conditioning in order to dehumidify a place.
Right.
Versus now where you're on the grid and you can just go, oh, I press the button and it's on, and you get a bill and you pay, oh, well, I ran the air conditioning all month and it was $10 extra. Not going, well, I need to turn the air conditioning off so I can turn the stove on to cook dinner.
Exactly.
Our conversation really, for me, reinforces how much learning we have to do in order to prepare for a world with less energy.
That's right. And it's all about reskilling. There's an importance behind the reskilling. And I think that's what a lot of us are trying to do as instructors, is taking it away from just theory-based, information-based, at least I am as an instructor, and trying to bring it into the real, into the now, because my feedback so far in what I do, teaching permaculture and gardening and farming and trees and forest gardens and natural building, is that the feedback I've gotten so far is people want to know how to do things. They want to participate. They don't want to sit so much into a classroom. They want to know how to grow their food. How are you growing your food? What's the examples you've seen? Can we do some? So reskilling is probably one of my main objectives as an instructor. Now, to convince the general public that they need to be reskilled, I'm not for sure if I can do that. But as energy starts to change and morph from oil-based to whatever, I'm not for sure, sunlight-based, definitely, then we have to reskill ourselves somewhere along the line. I guess we're just kind of standing at this edge right now, just as people start to wake up to the fact that they're not going to have their simple push-button air conditioner all the time.
Or if they want that, they're going to have to put in a serious investment to have a system in place to allow for that.
Exactly, exactly. Without a definite major cost. Mm-hmm, major cost.
I know I priced a system to cover our basic needs in my household, even as we've continued to lower our energy
mm-hmm.
needs, and retrofit a stick-built home
yeah.
for energy efficiency. And even as I watch our numbers come down and trying to calculate what a baseline is going to be, it's still tens of thousands of dollars.
Right.
That might be an investment that can be made over a number of years, but I don't know that that's an option for a lot of folks.
No, it's not.
Where do we make those conversions to help people so that, well, they've got their home, but they need to repair it and make it more energy efficient?
Right, right. That's a big question. You know, how do we repair our homes? How do we get incentives to do it? How do we get incentives and know the low interest loans to buy solar systems that we can pay back with our current income, you know, stuff like that? How do we grow food that has the cost of food as the price, you know, not a subsidized cost? What do we subsidize? Do we subsidize, keep subsidizing things, subsidize war and corn and soybeans, and or do we subsidize for the people's sake? That's a real big open question, and I don't have necessarily an answer to it, but I have a lot of questions.
There's our shared acquaintance, Ben Wise, once said to me in, I think it may have been in my permaculture design course with him, that when you buy food from an organic farmer, you're paying the real cost for food.
That's right.
Because they're accounting for those externalities in their system. So yes, corn really is that expensive. Tomatoes really do cost that much from a farmer.
That's right.
Just all this other money that we don't see that goes to farming that pays for that.
That's right. Yeah. That's definitely right.
And then you garden and you teach people permaculture and then they learn it's really this easy?
Yeah. Yeah, most of them leave like, wow, that was great. I can't believe I can lay down some cardboard, throw something on top of it, and then start my tomatoes. Yeah, they love that stuff. And you don't have to have a large space to do it. They love that too.
Well, and as you say, with working with building a natural home, realizing how much you really do and don't need is important as the house size is down, as you realize how big does my garden really need to be.
Because you need time to relax. You need time for stillness. You need time for enjoyment of your family and watching them and caring for them. And you need time to wash the dishes and cook the food and prepare and harvest and ferment and all the things that we do. Party some, social aspects, you know. You just need time for all that. If you're constantly a slave to your garden farm system, then that's not really the objective, you know. It's to cultivate human beings. I do believe what Fukuoka said. Farming is the cultivation of human beings, not of crops.
It was once said to me while I was gardening along someone that this is life, that act of gardening and growing your own food and being in that environment, it's life. It's reaffirming.
And all of our DNA vibrates to that level. You know, all of our DNA can understand that. Not all of our DNA can stand nanoseconds of information coming at us from a computer screen. I mean, our DNA is just not ready for that. But it can understand gardening and seeds and how they grow, and it can understand it. We just have to remember.
We've kind of moved a bit to philosophy from natural building.
Imagine that.
Our conversation this evening, I was originally thinking about the various techniques and what people can do, but I realized as we were talking about this that it's important to have an understanding of what those techniques are, which I'll include a list of the various natural building options in the show notes so people can do some more research on their own. As with the rest of permaculture, you have to design and think of the area that you're in. You have to observe and make something that's appropriate. And what you've offered this evening is a philosophy on how people can learn what they need to about natural building, and a path and a system for them to go about finding the information that they need to really learn about what this process is.
Yeah, that's very good.
A lot of times I'm a facts and figures person, so I had this list and I wanted to go, well, you know, what about Cobb and doing this and your ratios and get into all this technical information, but that's really all going to depend on what someone's materials are, how much money they have, what their site is, the options available.
That's right.
And they may wind up finding out that some of these things aren't even legally allowed where they are, so.
Or they just don't work, you know.
Well, I can imagine having a high water table and having a lot of moisture around some of these options would just cause them to fall apart pretty quickly. I look over all this and I feel satisfied. Is there anything else that you would like to add to the conversation before I thank you for your time?
No, that's about it for me. I'm just glad that we were able to do this and excited about it. I'm really enjoying what you're doing. I've listened to some of your podcasts so far, and I'm very satisfied with it, and we need more of it. So keep up the good work, and I hope people support you by donating money and time and help.
Well, I appreciate that. You keep doing your part, and I'll keep doing mine.
That's right. It takes all kinds of us.
Everyone, everywhere.
Right.
I'd like to thank you for your time, for joining me tonight. I really had a great conversation. As always, these things never wind up going where I thought they would. And I walk away with more information and ideas than I could have ever imagined.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me for another interview. If you have comments or questions about this or any other episode, go to thepermaculturepodcast.com and leave a message or send me an email. That address is show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Until the next time, take care of yourself, the earth, and each other.